Gospel Tangents needs your support. Please consider donating to our website, gospeltangents.com. We'll use your donation to help produce other podcasts and professional documentaries such as this. Welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. We've been talking a lot about the ban, but when did the ban actually begin? Warner McCary seems to be the last person who might have been ordained as late as 1846. In 1921, Apostle David O. McKay didn't even know a ban existed. So when did the ban actually happen? We asked Dr. Paul Reeve that question. Let's listen in on our conversation.
Do you know when approximately that time was where they went from embracing, you know, other religious and ethnic minorities to pushing them away?
It's sort of just gradual across the course of the 19th century. I mean, the most evidence is with blacks, and so they, you know, at least two black men are ordained to the Melchizedek priesthood in the first couple of decades of Mormonism. And then you see sort of that deterioration across the course of the 19th century in fits and starts, right? So Brigham Young first openly articulates a race-based priesthood restriction in 1852. But I don't believe it's really actually lockstep in place until 1908 with Joseph F. Smith. And you have a lot of intervening kind of events that it takes on a life of its own, accumulates precedent, and each succeeding leadership group not willing to violate the precedent established by the previous group, even though Brigham Young's position is a violation of the precedent that Joseph Smith established of open priesthood ordination. But after Brigham Young articulates a race-based priesthood restriction, and then it grows into a race-based temple restriction, leadership by the 1880s, they're remembering back, well, I remember Brigham Young said this, and some actually saying, well, I think Joseph Smith said it, or it began with Joseph Smith. And the last brick, I think, is in place in 1908 when the black priesthood holders are erased from collective Mormon memory. Joseph F. Smith, in a 1908 meeting, will simply say that Joseph Smith himself declared Elijah Abel, a black priesthood holder's ordination, null and void himself. There's no evidence that that's true, but he's falsely remembering back in 1908, and so once you have that as the new memory, like you've erased the black priesthood holders from collective Mormon memory, and the new memory moving forward then is that this restriction has always been in place. It was there from the beginning. Joseph Smith began it. We can't do anything about it. It's going to take a revelation to get rid of it. And I think that transition takes place in 1908. That very same meeting, Joseph F. Smith will say that missionaries should no longer proselyte amongst black people, that if they want to get baptized, it's going to be of their own volition, but missionaries shouldn't actively go out seeking converts amongst them, which is absolutely a very different perspective than animated the early years of Mormonism, where missionaries were preaching in all groups. So there's a letter from the president of the Northern States Mission in the 19-teens, I can't remember the exact year, and it simply says, well, we have three black families in the Northern States Mission. There's one in Wisconsin, there's one in Indiana, there's one in Minnesota. The problem is when our missionaries bring white investigators to these congregations, they are repelled. They say that we don't want to worship with black people. And so I've instructed my missionaries to stop proselyting in black neighborhoods. So that's how Mormonism becomes known and branded as a white church, right? They stop actively proselyting amongst black people because by that point, remember, the Supreme Court has put its stamp of approval on segregation, on separate but equal. And you have white investigators showing up to these congregations, seeing black families, and they're saying, oh, those people should be segregated. We don't want to worship with them. And it's deemed by the mission president in the Northern States Mission as too problematic. So his solution is, well, he tells his missionaries stop proselyting in black neighborhoods.
That's interesting. I've had a debate with a few other people about when did the ban actually start? So interesting, you've taken the opposite position of me. To me, it looks like, from my research, it looks like the last person ordained, last black man ordained, was 1846, Warner McCary in Nauvoo. I believe it was Orson Pratt or Orson Hyde, I don't remember. But no one was ordained after that. And so I guess you could call that period from 1846 to 1908 as kind of a de facto ban. Maybe, I actually did want to get into 1852 as well, as we talk about that. But, I mean, would you agree that, yeah, there was kind of a de facto ban? Because Warner McCary, boy, he was a colorful person. Maybe you could talk a little bit about him.
Sure. Yeah, so, you know, to be clear, what I'm saying is, you know, they aren't actively ordaining black men to their priesthood, at least as much as they are aware, during that time period. But it's still not completely solidified, in my estimation, like the last brick in this wall of racial restriction. So I see it accumulating bricks, right, across the course of the 19th century. The last brick is 1908, when you erase from collective Mormon memory Elijah Abel as a black priesthood holder. So there's a meeting in 1879 when Elijah Abel appeals to be sealed to his wife and to have his endowment. And so I suggest then in the book, which touches off an investigation. John Taylor, who's then the leader of Mormonism, leads this investigation. So if the racial restriction is unambiguously in place as late as 1879, why do you need to have an investigation? If it's completely understood and everyone's on board, why investigate? And that's 1879. So as late as 1879, there are questions about what do we do when Elijah Abel wants to be sealed to his wife and get his endowment. And Joseph F. Smith is sent to meet with Elijah Abel in 1879 and comes back to report that Abel has produced priesthood certificates and says that Joseph Smith himself sanctioned his priesthood. And Joseph F. Smith reports that in that meeting. And the decision is that they will allow his priesthood to stand, but not allow him temple admission. And so you have then this accumulating precedent and really then the beginning of the temple restriction, right, that grows out of this priesthood ban. But Abel goes on another mission, right, and dies with his priesthood intact. And his son and grandson are also ordained, and so there are exceptions.
Do you know when his son and grandson were ordained, approximately what years?
Yeah, so I think the son, you know, it's in the book. I think the son is the 19-teens. I think it's 1912, and then the grandson is 1935. Both of them in Logan.
So even after the final brick,
yes,
we still have some exceptions.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And in 1907, the first presidency puts the one-drop rule into play, which simply stipulates that anyone with one drop of African ancestry cannot hold a priesthood or be admitted into the temple. And that's typical of what's going on in the nation. So states like Virginia are adopting the one-drop rule to define legally who is black and who's white. And Virginia says if you have one drop of black ancestry, then according to the law in the state of Virginia, you are legally black. You can have 100 white ancestors and one black ancestor, and you would still be defined as legally black. And the same thing then that the first presidency articulates in 1907 for priesthood and temple admission is a one-drop policy. So that's a policy impossible to enforce. We know now, especially with DNA. And so there are all kinds of exceptions. If the one-drop rule is the standard, all kinds of exceptions that make it through, you know, a wall that's becomes, you know, impossible to police. Yeah.
Black History Month is almost over. We'll finish our conversation with Dr. Paul Reeve, and I'll ask him if he helped participate in the creation of the Race and Priesthood essay on LDS.org.
I did help with the essay.
We hope you'll come back and listen to the conclusion of our conversation with Dr. Paul Reeve. We hope you'll also subscribe to our website, gospeltangents.com. You can purchase a transcript for just $3 there. You can also get one on amazon.com. Also, please give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or other podcast applications so others can find out about us. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll continue to support us here at Gospel Tangents.